Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, and welcome to another edition of Visions. I am Yudali Wickham Ashby, and today we will talk about one of those hard to talk about topics. It's difficult for people to address, it's difficult for families to speak about domestic violence. And here to help me discuss this topic is Dr. Adele Jones. Welcome to the program, Adele.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, I saved the introductions because I want you to speak for yourself in explaining to the public who you are.
Okay, well, thank you for this opportunity. I am a professor at a UK university, and I'm director of the None in Three Centre for the Prevention of Gender-Based Violence. It's a research centre, and we work with partners in the Caribbean, in India, in Africa, and in Europe. So we are a global research centre, and we conduct research on different kinds of gender-based violence. And our focus is how to use the research to prevent violence. We know there's a lot of things that need to be done. We know we need refuges and good laws. We need good policy. We need good training, but we also need prevention. And that is our focus. And we were funded by the European Union to conduct a research project within Barbados and Grenada, which ended in 2018, but the work is still ongoing.
This type of work never stops, because there are always individuals who experience some measure of gender-based violence, whether it's in the home, at school, you know, in the community, at work, wherever there is some measure of violence that we need to seriously address. And I like the fact that the focus is more on prevention.
Yes.
Rather than trying to just deal with after the fact.
Yes.
So tell us a little more about yourself, Adele, in terms of, do you have any Caribbean connections? Did you live all your life in the UK?
No, actually, I did not. My family background is actually from West Africa. Mm-hmm. So people think I'm Caribbean, but the Caribbean is my adopted home. I am Bajan by marriage. And so of course, this is where I am. Right. And I have been working in the Caribbean now for 20 years. I worked at the University of the West Indies in Trinidad. And I found so many parallels with my growing up experiences in Sierra Leone, which is where my father's family are from. So I'm not from Barbados, but I am now of Barbados.
Well, we thank you, and we appreciate having you as part of our Barbadian heritage. So let's talk about the None in Three project, because I got involved in the early stages when you came to Barbados with Dr. Ina Trotman-Jemmett, mm-hmm. to actually facilitate some research around the whole question of, the subject of domestic violence for women who were pregnant women and women with disabilities. And there was another category?
Women living with HIV.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. So tell us about how that research went and what were some of the major findings.
Well, I mean, the first thing I'd like to say to those who are listening is that there are two kinds of research that we do. We do large-scale surveys, and we also do small samples, qualitative research. And the research you're talking about that you were involved in, Yudali, was the qualitative research. And why that is important, it means that you don't gather large numbers of people. You gather small numbers of people, but you go in depth so that you can fully understand what it is like to have lived with domestic violence, what are the skills, the strategies, what is the impact. And this was qualitative research. The other thing that I'd like to say is that we decided there is a lot of research in Barbados on domestic violence. But when we talked, when Ina, myself and others talked about what kind of research was needed, where were there any gaps, we were told, look, disabled women, women living with disabilities, women living with HIV, They may be a sentence in a report, but they are never the center of research. They're never at the heart of research. And we want to find out what their experiences are of living with domestic violence or having survived it. And so these are why we chose those groups of women. So we targeted specific groups of women. But I also have to say, the thing that we did not do was to look at men's experiences of domestic violence, men who are disabled. We did do research with men and youth, but we did not focus specifically on men who are living with disabilities. And I think some of the issues that we found, if we were able to replicate the research with men, I think we would be quite alarmed by some of their experiences too. Mm-hmm. So it was simply that we didn't have enough money or time, but that is a piece of research that really needs to be done.
Great. And were you surprised by any of the findings coming out of the qualitative research around women with disabilities?
Actually, I was, and I have to say I've been working in this field now for many, many decades, and I've done a lot of research around disability. And yet there are still things that would surprise you. For example, we found that a woman's disability was often used by her partner as a weapon. So that we had a woman in our study, women, maybe blind women, and the man would use the fact of her blindness to punish her, taking away things that she, moving things when she knew where they were, listening into her conversations, going onto her cell phone, looking at who had been in touch with her. All the things, he was controlling her by taking advantage of the fact that she was blind. That is one example. We found many examples. We found that women who are disabled, as you will know, they have less access to economic advancement and employment, and as a consequence they can be trapped. Mm-hmm. They can be trapped in violent relationships. Women often are trapped for many reasons, for financial reasons. For women with disabilities, those financial reasons are actually more profound. We also found that it was very difficult for women to access help, because a woman living with a disability may actually need somebody to take her somewhere to get help, or to make the call for
yes.
her, or to attend court with her, or that certain places are not accessible for a wheelchair. So accessing help was also very, very much more difficult for women living with disabilities. Mm-hmm. I think that there was the issue of personal care. For some women in our study, they needed help with personal care, with dressing, with bathing, and sometimes they reported that their partners would use those opportunities either to sexually assault them or to physically assault them. That those opportunities for personal care were opportunities, because they were physically dependent on the male in that situation, they felt they had no choice but to put up with that. So I think what we would say is that women with disabilities experience the same kinds of violence as other women, but they have extra level of jeopardy in terms of getting access to support, getting help, and getting access to justice.
Yes, and that is very true, because sometimes I think immediately as professionals hear disability, they're thinking, well, we have no services. Our premises may be inaccessible, and not going beyond those two points where they can, you know, think differently of how can I provide the service in an alternative way. And therefore, that helps to keep the individual trapped in the violent situation. And one of the other areas that I speak passionately and often about is the need for privacy. And sometimes, again, because yes. an individual may have a disability, the other person thinks, Well, they don't need to. They don't. There's really no need for privacy.
Yes.
I can check their phone anytime. I can, you know, read their correspondence or whatever material they have without having to get permission from those individuals. And that's really breaking. That's really violating the mm-hmm. individual's privacy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes. So, as I said, what I liked about the Non-In3 project is the level of training then that was provided for professional social workers, nurses, doctors, and, you know, some of these skilled persons who have to interact with the disabled or with persons who have experienced gender-based violence.
Yes.
Speak to that training.
Well, we developed five different training courses based on our research findings. We do have a research report, which is published. We have many publications out of the research. They're all available on the Non-In3 website, and they're available for free. We also have our training courses that we developed. We trained a cadre of trainers. So there are trained people in Barbados who have been trained to address the findings of our research mm-hmm. and provide services and better practices for survivors. So we devised five training programs, and they were varied in terms of how long they were and what their focus was. And those training programs, as you say, were multidisciplinary. They were for anybody who has an interest in this area of work or who has a responsibility in this area of work. And then we evaluated the training to find out how useful it was. And I have since, well, you know, because you were part of a meeting that we mm-hmm. had in December just gone, where we actually gathered together a lot of people to look at what is the ongoing impact of this work. Is it still useful? Can it still be used? And it's good to see that this research, well, we know domestic violence is a big problem. So we know that this research has a long life. As long as people use it and use the training materials, and perhaps even bring in some of those trained trainers to do training in their organizations, because those people are available. All local people, or highly professional,
yes,
from different disciplines.
Mm-hmm. And one of the other areas that was extremely heartwarming to see was the provision of the material in alternate formats. So that, again, persons with disabilities, whether they were blind, hearing impaired, or have like a learning challenge, could also access the material and read it for their own understanding.
Yes.
And having some of the persons with disabilities involved as well in the promotion of the findings. I think that makes a very strong impact on the groups that you're trying to target and help to mitigate some of the violence.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the other thing, if I could just say, one of the things that we do for prevention is to take our research and to use that to create video games.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes,
we have created a pro-social, they're called pro-social video games. In other words, these are video games that are anti-violence, and they can be used as interventions working with young people. We have a number of schools in Barbados that are using the video game that we created here. We're currently working on four other video games, and we did very robust evaluation to find out what difference does it make to a child playing a game to begin to understand how violence impacts those people who are involved, what can be done about it, and also to help children who are themselves living in a home where there is violence. Because if there is a woman living in a home with violence, if she has children, her children are also victims of that violence.
That is so true. And I think sometimes we take it for granted that the violence doesn't impact the child as significantly as it does.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. So speak to us a little more about the game, the video game, because that idea would have been born from a child.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Actually, I looked at my grandchildren and I see them playing video games, and I'm not interested in games. I don't understand the appeal. And I remember my grandson, I said to him once, what is it I don't get it. I don't understand. He said, it doesn't matter, Nana, that you don't understand. It only matters that I understand. And I think that's exactly it. We decided we wanted, talking to children, what is the best way of reaching children, to begin to change children's attitudes, to help them become non-violent adults. And children said to us, we'll use games. Everybody tells us games are bad for us, but actually we love them. Use games. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the millions that these gaming companies have. We had one game developer who was wonderful, but he had to be everything. He was animator. He was the game designer. He was the programmer. He did everything. And the game he created is called Jesse. And again, it's available on Google Apps. It's free download. And it comes with a manual that can be used by facilitators and teachers. And you can create a whole lesson plan around the game. And you need a laptop and you need a mouse. And you play the game and a child plays a level at a time as part of a lesson. Or you can play it in a group. And one of the things that has been really good about Jesse is that since we piloted in Barbados and Grenada, the Ministry of Education in St. Lucia has taken this up, and they are going to be rolling it out as part of their HFLE program for every child in St. Lucia, because they think the game is a way of teaching children about violence and developing skills and strategies for dealing with it.
So the HFLE is the Home and Family Life...
Health and Family Life
course
Education.
In these secondary schools.
That's right, yes.
Because we have that same program here as well.
Yes.
So, as you said, give us the website where persons can go and download Jesse and read the other material around the research that has been conducted in Barbados and Grenada.
Okay. Yes, it is www.noneinthree.org. And just to say something about None in Three, where does our name come from? That comes from the global statistic that one in three women and children will be exposed to some form of physical or sexual violence in their lifetime. And our effort is to try to make that none in three.
Right, yes, great. And share with us about the research then done with the men, the perpetrators in Grenada.
Actually, that was very crucial. We did a research with 60 men and youth from 16 all the way up to 80 years. They were just general men in the population, but we also had some men who had been through a batterers program. You know, you have a batterers program in Barbados, mm-hmm. and there's also one in Grenada. So we had some men that had been through that program, and we were able to talk to them about what they think is the problem. And one of the things that they told us was that we ignore male victims of domestic violence, that if there are victims who are male, they're told they should lash her, or they should beat her, or they're not man enough if they don't retaliate. If they try and take their problems to a professional, they are likely to be laughed at. They have nowhere to go for support. And if they become violent, they are now the perpetrator. So I think we realize that there's a big problem here with men who are victims of violence, and the fact that we don't take that seriously. These are not just problems of the Caribbean. These are problems we work in many countries, and we find exactly the same elsewhere. The other thing was that men told us that the whole discussion around gender, they feel excluded from that. That when we say gender, a lot of men think we simply mean women. And that they object to that, they resent that, because it means they are not able to contribute to solutions, and that their perspectives are missing. So we have men talk to us about the solutions to violence, the causes of it, where they learn to be violent, and what is it that makes men continue to be violent. And we have all of that information is written up in a report, which is called 21 Lessons. Because out of this research, both with women and with men, we identified 21 lessons for governments and ministries and civil society organizations And each of those lessons has a set of recommendations, which are not necessarily about more resource. Sometimes it's about doing something differently or recognizing the problem.
And I think that that is so crucial, that we understand that each of us has a voice, have hands that we can use to change perspectives or to change attitudes, to change mindsets, or simply to change a program that can include and benefit the male perpetrator, the women with disabilities, the men with disabilities, children who have been affected, women themselves, whether they were pregnant or not, but generally just make a positive difference in reducing the violence around women and men.
Yudeli, when you started off this interview, you said it's something we don't like to talk about.
And that's true.
100% I agree with you. And 100% I agree that it is actually everybody's business. Everybody is impacted by violence in the family, mm-hmm. in the home, in the school. And everybody can do something. And even if that something is to talk about it.
Yes, it helps to reduce the issue and bring it to the fore, you know, reduce the difficulty in speaking about it.
Yeah.
And only recently I was reading some research again that is suggesting that the trauma from violence that many individuals experience in their childhood affects their health, not only the mental health, but the physical health as well of the persons as they grow into adulthood.
Yeah.
And that's what, and there's a suggestion that that's why so many persons of different ethnicities experience high blood pressure, diabetes, and some of the other non-communicable chronic illnesses that is raging through the Caribbean right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So again, we have to look at all aspects of how violence impacts our lives.
Yes.
You know? So I remember at the meeting in December, one of the highlights or that one of the points you highlighted was the fact that this initiative, which started in Barbados, has led to further developments for similar programs in Jamaica, Uganda, and I think
India, the UK, mm-hmm.
and the UK. Okay, mm-hmm. great. So speak to us now in terms of the, will it be the similar program, or are there some changes, different aspects you're looking at?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because often people think that something is developed in the richer countries of the world and brought into the Caribbean. This is something that was pioneered in the Caribbean. The model that we have created, mm-hmm. The non-in-three model, it came out of Barbados. And so we're really proud of that. And yes, we received government funding to establish a research center. We're now working, there are now 54 of us working across all of these different countries. And we're tackling different kinds of violence. In Jamaica, our focus is on child sexual abuse. And that is because our Jamaican experts said this is what we want to focus on. Mm-hmm. Not because it's necessarily worse than elsewhere, but they have decided that that is a focus for them. In Uganda, our partners are focusing on child marriage and sexual coercion related to that. Mm-hmm. In India, our partners are focusing on violence against women in private and public places. And in the UK, we are focusing on violence in adolescent relationships, including cyberbullying, which is a very big issue.
Yes.
And we don't know if we will be successful, but we have grant applications being considered. If we are successful, that will take our work to Brazil and some Latin American countries, and that would be focusing on online sexual exploitation mm-hmm. of children. So we have a lot of work to do. So everything, the model is the same, but the focus is a different focus depending upon what the country has prioritized. Okay. And in each country, we will do the research, the surveys, the qualitative research, and we are also creating a game for use as an intervention with children in that country.
And I really want to underscore the power of those games, because they are, as we normally see, games are very addictive. And children will, and adults, will sit and play those games for hours and hours. And therefore, if we can use the same games in a very positive way to help change, you know, the empathy, bring more empathy to the issue and change the way of thinking around violence and see what we may just think of a cultural issue is really a violence issue and seek to address that through the game. I think that is where the real lessons can be learned.
Yes. In fact, one of the things that we did, I think we were the very first study, I haven't come across any others, that measured empathy for victims of domestic violence. So when children played the game, we ran control trials, randomized control trials, and we tried to measure, does playing Jesse make a difference in children's empathy? And you're right, because not having empathy for victims is one of the characteristics that actually suggests that somebody might become violent, that you lack an empathy. You have no regard for how your actions affect somebody else. So if we can grow empathy amongst children, we get them to understand the consequences of their behaviors towards other people. And we found that Jesse made a real difference in empathy. And that work is published in a high-impact journal.
Nice, nice. So Adele, tell us about the research findings around the impact of violence on children in the households, in the families.
Actually, yeah, this was one of, I think, the most important pieces of work that we ever did. We did a survey of nearly 1,400 children between the ages of 10 and 18. And we could not have done this without the support of schools and the ministries of education in both countries. And we are very thankful for that. The schools that participated in our work were wonderful. I mean, and we made sure that the schools that participated were not just the schools in the disadvantaged areas, but also we had prestige schools participating as well. So we had a very, this is probably one of the largest survey samples ever being done in Barbados and Grenada. And the survey was to find out to what extent had children been exposed to violence. Had they witnessed violence at home? Had they been exposed to it directly as victims? Had they heard their parents fighting? Had they seen their parents fighting? Who was violent in the house? Had they experienced violence in their communities? Had they experienced violence in school? And what did that do in terms of their attitudes to violence? Now, I did not bring the statistics with me, but we did find that a very alarming number of children are regularly and routinely exposed to violence every day of their lives. Now, what we then found is when we look at how that affects children's attitudes to violence, it can be of no surprise to any of the listeners that children thought violence was normal, that girls thought it's quite normal for a boyfriend to beat the girlfriend, that husbands beat wives, that this is how life is, that it's normal. And we also found that boys that thought that violence was normal were more likely to be bullies in school as well. So what we have is a link now between children's exposure to violence and violence becoming normalized and acceptable. And if children think it's acceptable, that possibly explains why we see so much violence in our schools. So that children are not recognizing some of their behaviors as violent. However, children told us that they experienced it as violence. And one of the things that really surprised us was that boys were exposed to higher levels of violence and what we call polyvictimization, which means that they're suffering from emotional abuse, that they experience physical violence and sexual violence on a regular basis. And those are the boys who worry us the most, because they're the ones that are most likely to become perpetrators of violence in the future, unless we can provide some interventions. And again, I would say, if we can work with the youth, we will prevent violence in the future. because young people are much more predisposed to changing their behaviors and attitudes than people who have them hardened.
Correct, correct. Well, Adele, time has really caught up with us, and it has been a very useful program, I think, to really start, or not start, but really continue the conversation around gender-based violence, domestic violence. And I would want that in the future, we'll be able to touch base on the same non-in-3 project and the work that it's continuing to do and its impact in the, our Caribbean region.
Thank you.
So thank you very much for coming and sharing.
You're welcome.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Yodalee Wickham-Ashby, and today my very special guest was Dr. Adele Jones. You can reach me on 1-246-269-9660. You can also WhatsApp me on that mobile number or at 1-246-430-7300. And of course, you can email me at visionsbarbados@gmail.com. That's visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And of course, you can go on vob929.com, look for the podcast link, hover over it until the drop down box comes up, and you will see Visions radio program. So you can listen to this and past episodes. So until next week, keep the love flowing, keep the violence out, and be safe.